League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there. League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
Swangles.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. How the hell are you? Thanks for checking us out. I know you've got a million choices out there. It's very humbling that you've decided to spend a little bit of time with me and my insanity, and I certainly do appreciate that. And I also appreciate the amazing support of our sponsors. Chemical Free Body has been one for about the past year. Tim James put me through the ringer. He sent me a box of stuff and said, you've got to do this. I'll give you 90 days. I did. The results were amazing. I'm putting together a video to show the results. So yeah, man, it works. I'm not going to lie. His stuff absolutely positively will make you feel so much better. It's all natural, you know, no, as the name implies, there's no chemicals in it. It's amazing. He had me on the Green 85, the gut detox, the toxin detox, probiotics, and ultra enzymes as well. So if you are interested, if you are in the market for vitamins, I would suggest just going to chemicalfreebody.com, taking a look, see if there's something there that you like. They have free shipping inside the United States for you. So just use the promo code macro, or you can go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro as well. And what you'll see there is the package that Tim has put together for our listeners. It's the same package that he put me through. I had incredible results, and I've got the video to show you to prove it. So check out chemicalfreebody.com, promo code macro. And also, after God knows the year we've been through and using our crystal ball to see what's coming in the future, you better get yourself prepared, my friends. Better get yourself ready for the apocalypse or something close to that. I would suggest going to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. That is the specific website that has been designed for us by My Patriot Supply. Thank you to them. they're selling all kinds of great things. They've got emergency survival food. They have survival items. They have water filtration and air purification. And yes, I feel like Alex Jones talking about all this stuff, but you better get yourself prepped, man. You know, if you don't do it, at My Patriot Supply, then do it somewhere. Just start thinking about these things. Let's be proactive. Proactive is the key, not reactive. Reactive gets you into, you know, fights with people for toilet paper in the, you know, in aisle four. So we don't want to do that. So get yourself ready. Better to be 2 months early than a day late. Go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. Well, you know, I had Whitney Webb on the show not too long ago, and it's always great to have her, but I'll tell you what, she'll give you nightmares. You know, you start thinking about the, you know, the where we're headed in this digital dystopian hellscape that these maniacs have planned for us. And I don't say that to be, you know, negative or, you know, to give up in any way. We're certainly not going to be giving up. But it is fair to just make these comments and talk about these things because it's important to be aware of it. You know, you got to be aware of it before you can change it, or you got to be aware of it before you can get out of the way of some of it. So I think it's important for us to just be honest about where we currently are and where things are headed in the short term and where things are headed in the long term, as long as these people are in positions of authority. COVID was the excuse to roll in all of these new draconian measures. I think it's becoming obvious to people. I mean, it has the COVID op has so many different, you know, it's so useful for them in a variety of ways. You know, it's the, you know, to close down the economy and destroy small and medium-sized businesses, to lock people in their homes and make them, you know, lose their jobs because they're forced to stay at home, to increase anxiety, to create panic, to you know, eventually on in the operation, get you sort of turning on one another and point, you know, this person might be infected, or that person looks like, that person coughed. Oh shit, stay away from that person. They just coughed. It's like, get over yourself, you know. But there's so many people, and we see the like funny pictures or little clips online of like the bubble people, you know, the people that have wrapped themselves in saran wrap and decided to go out. And you go, that looks healthy mentally and physically. I mean, so it's been like a litmus test to see, to check the intelligence level and gullibility factor of the sheeple people. And we've failed. I mean, collectively as a society, we failed the test. When you see people double masking in their car by themselves and driving around, we've failed. You know, not you and me personally, but as a society, we have outsourced our critical thinking to people that do not have our best intentions at heart, and we've allowed the worst people to run the show at the expense of the best people. It's really reprehensible. But that was only the precursor to what's coming. And it's, I mean, look, technology it goes both ways, right? It just depends who's in charge of it. Technology is great. It can give you the opportunity to do amazing things and see things online that you would have never seen before. And, you know, it changes the world, of course. But and so advances in technology are always welcome. But with that comes the unintended consequences of these technological improvements. And some of these can be used for very nefarious purposes. And sometimes, because this is such an incremental process, you sometimes can't see the big picture. It happens too slowly, and you can't really map it out until it's too late. And then you realize, hey, wait a second, they've just built a digital prison around me, and I didn't know it. You know, I didn't notice it. And one thing that kind of, well, I guess it's a good thing about the COVID op and where we sit today is that, for better or for worse, they moved really quickly. And they might have moved too quickly, in my opinion, because I think a lot of people have woken up to the idea that maybe this is not exactly as it appears. Maybe the things that that they're telling us on our nightly news aren't totally true, or the precautions that we're being forced to take don't exactly are incongruent with reality, you know, with common sense and things like that. A lot of inconsistencies. I feel like they maybe overplayed their hand a little bit, but they're playing it. They're all in on this one. You know, this is really important. I think that we acknowledge now that the globalist crowd, the Davos predator class people, they have decided that they're all in a poker term, which I like to use from time to time. So that could mean a couple of things. In a poker game, that could mean that the person has a really good hand. It could also mean that they're running out of chips. They've got an okay hand, and they don't know what the next couple hands are going to be. So if now's the time to really, you know, sort of prevent getting grinded down and just eventually losing all your money slowly over time. You get a decent hand, you make a stand. I think that's where they are. I don't think they have a strong hand. You don't, because if you have a strong hand in poker, sometimes you slow play it to sucker people in. They're not doing that. They're going over the top. They're acting insane. They're bringing in new dictates that contradict with logic in a way that they've got to know a certain percentage of the people are going to go, wait a second, why are we doing this? You know, things like, you know, the science behind it and the mandates, you know, the sprint towards this vaccine passport that they're talking about and all of this. It is, frankly, they seem a little bit desperate. I think the reason is because they don't know how much time they've got left. This seems like it's going to have to work for them. The COVID op is going to have to work in order to take us into this new fourth industrial revolution, which by all accounts, you know, if you read the United Nations or Rockefeller plans for things, it's always Agenda 2030, right? It's 10 years out from when COVID started. And we've known about that. We've talked about that. We thought, well, that's their plan. They're going to try and get all this insanity on the books before, you know, by 2030, or maybe a little afterwards, right? Maybe it doesn't move as fast. We didn't expect it to get bumped up 10 years. So that could go either way. That could be a sign of strength or a sign of weakness. You know, then maybe they feel like we won't make it another 10 years. People are waking up to this whole thing, and it might be now or never. And where we're going with this is we're walking into our digital enslavement, unfortunately. This is the path we're on. These are the types of conversations that I had with Whitney, where, you know, she explains about what Joe Biden's team is working on. Hell, what Trump's Operation Warp Speed was working on as well. And I'd like to paint a picture for you in this episode, if I may, of where things are going in terms of the digital world that we're moving into. And it might be, well, it will be a bit frightening. And I don't say that to be like, you know, somebody that's trying to like scare the shit out of you just for the sake of that. I think I would be doing you a disservice if I wasn't objective and honest about what I see, so that not in an attempt to freak you out, but in an attempt to make you aware of it, because maybe we can change some of it beforehand, you know. But this isn't set in stone, but they're drawing out the blueprints for this right now, or they have been for a while. And I want to walk through some of the components of this so that you can get to thinking about whether or not this is a world you want to live in. And let's start with currency. Okay. Right now, we're starting to see cryptocurrencies become a little bit more widely accepted. You know, we all know about them. Some of us have been in them a long time ago. Some of us are new to the party. There's nothing inherently wrong about cryptocurrencies. In fact, there's a whole lot right about it, to be fair. Not all are created equal. Some of them are scammy. Some of them are legit. Some of them serve a purpose, a function through some sort of, you know, blockchain world that they're created for, you know, and so they're all a little bit different. But the central banking component, the way it's currently established, with the Bank for International Settlements being the central bank of the central banks, and then dictating down to all of the banks underneath it, like the Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, and all of these central banks in each country that the Rothschilds control. Now, of course, back to basics here. These central banks are privately owned. They are not public. I mean, the Federal Reserve is not a government bank. I'm sorry for people that still believe that. It is not true. They are independent. You can read Ed Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. He'll lay it out to you there in a way that'll make perfect sense to you. So the central banks see something like Bitcoin and they are properly freaked out by it. I saw something today, Jamie Dimon talking about it on CNBC or something, calling, you know, saying, well, you know, my fear is that a bunch of old ladies are going to buy it and then someone's going to steal all their crypto or that it's going to go to nothing. And it's just, it's obviously dog shit, especially coming from Jamie Dimon, who's got a Citibank group that's a component that is in Bitcoin, even though they're saying that they're not in Bitcoin. They are. They had to admit it. And they're making it available to their private banking clients as well. So he's a pathological liar. Jamie Dimon shouldn't be trusted at all. But the point is that the central banks wish that they had a Bitcoin under their control. They don't. They can't control it. It is outside of their control, which is the reason why they're freaking out. Expect to hear more horror stories about Bitcoin on the nightly news. Expect to hear more, shit talking from Janet Yellen and Jerome Powell and you know, the usual suspects in at the IMF and World Bank and all these banking institutions. The reason being, not because it's an actual threat to us, but it's a threat to them. So they're going to scare you into thinking that. But what they're doing, parallel to this, is they're creating their own currencies, what's called a CBDC, Central Bank Digital Currency. Okay, this is where we're going. The dollar, as we know it, the US dollar, is going away. Berwick and I wrote about it in the book, in the Controlled Demolition book. You can read that. It is, when you say that in advance of it, people go, get the fuck out of here. What are you talking about? You don't know what you're talking about. Unfortunately, we do know what we're talking about. It's going away. It is. Now, it's not going to be as, I mean, the thing is, if we get real honest about it, the dollar is digital already. I mean, yes, we have paper versions of it. And yes, you know, you see the pictures of the drug lords with their, you know, mattresses, you know, like stacks of money and all that stuff. But 97% of dollars are digital. You know, it's just their bank codes. It's just sent from one bank to another through wire transfers and things like that. So it's not, you're not delivering pallets of cash unless you're Obama delivering it to Iran. But normal people, normal banks, they're not doing that. They're sending it digitally. So we're already in a digital version of the dollar. And the dollar's history has changed a lot. You know, it used to be, you know, backed by gold. Now it's backed by the military and a promise, and not a very good promise at that. So what are these CBDCs that are coming out? They're interesting. You're going to have to keep your eye on it. And I say interesting, not in a good way. This is what they are. It's a cryptocurrency. That doesn't mean that it's a good one. It doesn't mean that it's a stable one. It doesn't mean any of that, but it is it's a cryptocurrency. And inside this cryptocurrency, it won't function like Bitcoin. It will function much differently because it's programmable. That's the thing about it that's like that you need to keep your eyes on, is that if they design the U.S. digital dollar, let's just call it the U.S. digital dollar, and that's what the Fed decides, you know, we're going to go to this, we're going to go to this new currency, you know, and because we're moving into the digital age, this is the way you got to do it. So I was talking to Jimmy Jean about this. He was talking about this scenario he had, this thought he had. He said his version of this is you wake up one day, you go down to your bank. Your bank is like, hey, look, we're closed. There's been a transition. We'll explain it to you. Everything's getting processed. And then you go, okay, well, what's going on? Then they tell you what's happening. They say, listen, we're transitioning from the US dollar to this new US digital dollar. If you would like, if you say you get $10,000 in the bank, if you would like, you can move your US dollars into this US digital dollars on a 1-to-1 ratio right now. If you wait 30 days, we'll give you 75 cents on the dollar. If you wait 60 days, we'll give you 50 cents on the dollar. If you wait 90 days, we'll give you 25 cents on the, if you wait after that, we won't give you anything for it. So there'll be some sort of incentive. He's speculating, to be clear, but this is the sort of the carrot or stick philosophy of getting you into this. There'll be some incentive, or it'll be like, hey, you've got $10,000. We'll give you $15,000 of this new digital dollar, which costs them nothing to make because they just type it on a computer, right? And you go, oh, geez, this sounds good. And you know that your US dollar is being hyperinflated away. So you're like, oh, geez, maybe I should get in on this. And then you get in, you move over, and then you're trapped. You're in it. Because you can never exchange those US digital dollars for cash ever again. So you're trapped. You're officially in the system at that point. Now, because the coins are programmable, that means that you can set the parameters of them to do a variety of things. First of all, they'll be totally trackable. I mean, they'll be able to watch what you're buying and from whom. That just goes without saying. But they can bake certain things into this that will make it really interesting and not in a good way. So as an example, they could set an expiration date on your US digital coins, your digital dollar. So you've got this, now let's say you've got this imaginary $15,000 digital dollars in your wallet that's provided to you by the Federal Reserve, but it expires 90 days. And you go, oh shit. I mean, I kind of wanted to save that. Why can't I save it? I can't save it. You got to spend it. Well, you know, the economy's struggling because of COVID and, you know, retail sales are really down, you know, because of all of this. And frankly, you know, we need to kind of spark the economy. So we have decided we put this expiration date on it. It'll expire in 90 days. So you better go out and get something while you can, because on the 91st day, I mean, this money's just going to, it's just going to turn off. Can you see where that is going? Do you understand when they say you'll own nothing and you will never be happier? This is what they're talking about. You'll own nothing because you can't own anything. You can't save it, right? You can't save the money. You can't buy a house. You'll be able to shop at the company store. That's the problem. These new dollars can be set so that they're only taken in certain places, you know, like Amazon and Walmart and Best Buy and the big box stores. But God forbid you want to go down to your local hardware store, if it's still in business, and make a purchase. You go to use your digital wallet and they go, oh shit, I can't, it doesn't work. I can't accept it. I'm not set up to accept it. Your digital dollar only works at the company store. They've been wanting to do this for a long, long time. So you've got potentially expiring money that basically just is like lighting it on fire at the end of this whole thing. So you're forced to go out and spend it. You'll be paid this currency for your universal basic income, but there'll be strings attached, much like food stamps are now. You can't use it for certain things. I mean, food stamps, you can't use it to buy alcohol or cigarettes, and you can't use it to buy certain things. You know, it has to be like food-related items. So there's already limitations on that. That's because, hey, listen, if the government's going to give you this, quote, free stuff, then they are the ones that have the right to put some restrictions on how you can use it since they're giving it to you. The universal basic income won't be any different than that. There'll be strings attached. And the way they'll attach those strings is through this new digital dollar. So it might be that you can only shop at the company store, or you can't use it for certain products. You definitely can't. I mean, you definitely can't use it down at the weed store, right? I mean, not that this is probably the least of your problems, but you can't, you know, you can't go do an off-market transaction with somebody. You want to buy a used car from some guy? I don't know. Maybe in the future you can't do that. So it ruins your, it can, I'm not saying they will do this. I'm just saying that they can do this, put a programmable component into it so that your dollar is not, your digital dollar is not behaving the way your traditional dollar in your wallet behaves. It's not anonymous. You are limited in certain places where you can spend it. You have a certain amount of time in which you can spend it. So that forces money velocity to increase. So, you know, the Fed can step in and put all these, set these restrictions on it. And there's nobody saying that they can't set different restrictions for different people. So if you have let's just say that a social credit system, well, there could be restrictions put on the use of your digital dollar based on what your social credit score is. You know, maybe your score is too low and you're ineligible to use those digital dollars to buy airplane tickets because your score is too low, or train tickets or something like that. So now they've limited your travel. You see where this is going? It's pretty disgusting. You'll own nothing. That's one of the ways in which they can do this. So, but it's not limited to currency, of course, this digital enslavement that we're walking into. After 2020, one thing that we really, you know, came to the forefront was health, of course, because of COVID. And health became the major topic of discussion. And it wasn't just about improving your health. It was, how can we integrate other components into this health? Yeah, big tech, right? The government, of course. The media was pushing was the topic of discussion for a year, has been viruses, you know, and health-related services talked about by the media. Well, when Trump left and Biden came in, you know, after soundly defeating him with those 80 million votes, just kidding, he's been making some moves right away. And one of the things that he has done is to develop a digital health division. Now, you've heard of DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects, company. Well, they want to do HARPA. It's ARPA-H. So you could put the H in front and call it HARPA, or you could do ARPA-H. There's two different names for it. And it's like DARPA, but for the pharmaceutical industry instead of the defense industry. What could go wrong, right? DARPA, you get robot dogs and crazy shit like that. I'm sure HARPA is going to be much worse. You know, I don't know, much worse. It'll be much more, you'll have much more, intertwined relationship with it, more so than you would with a defense contractor component of it for DARPA. DARPA, you know, maybe overseas, maybe if you're in the Middle East, your biggest worry is DARPA and not HARPA. But in the United States, your biggest worry is going to be this new division. And it is poised to really take things to the next level. I mean, privacy gone. Your sovereign body gone. Where they want this to go is nothing short of a dystopian nightmare, all predicated and under the cover of improving your health. And it's not. It's not about improving your health. That's the cover story. That's what they'll talk about. But it won't ever really be about that. How do you know? Well, let's talk about it. Biden has already set up $6.5 billion for this. Okay. And he's set to do that to make sure that they are funded every year. Okay. It's rolling under NIH, National Institute of Health. Who runs that? Tony Fauci. Okay. So you're already in really questionable company there. But who's going to run this division? Well, a guy named Eric Lander will. And Eric Lander is not a name that will really set off alarm bells for many people, but he was really good friends and took a bunch of money from Jeffrey Epstein. So there's that, right? And we know what Epstein was doing with the scientists. I mean, we know that he was very much interested in eugenics, thinning the herd, evolutionary dynamics, things like that, population control. So the guy that took money from Epstein to study all this stuff is going to be running HARPA. Not good. And the decision on how they allocate money is not going to be based on, you know, peer-reviewed studies. It's just going to be it's just directed spending. So this Eric Lander guy just gets to decide who gets the money, and that's it. Much like Fauci does now. I mean, you know, Fauci is in charge of $3 billion every year he gets to give out. And so, you know, when you realize that and you see that all the institutions that he gives money to, it's not very hard to understand that they're not in a position to criticize him because he's the guy that gives them the money. He's the candy man. You know, you don't call him out when he's throwing money your way, lest you don't get any more money, right? So we see how this works. There's the incentivization of this of you to play ball in order to get the money or not say anything about what you see going on behind the scenes if you want to still get the money. So one of the things that this HARPA division is going to focus big time on are mRNA vaccines. Much like we've heard recently, but they want to use them for cancer treatments because, you know, they've had such a great response so far with the COVID vaccines. So you'll start to hear more about this mRNA technology that you're hearing rolled out for COVID vaccines. That's probably the first time most of us have heard about that, but it won't be the last. It's going to be talked about more and more. You're going to start to hear the push for it to be, well, if it could do this great job with COVID, then what could it do for cancer, right? Oh, we got to save cancer. Everybody's got to get this. Now it'll, you know, you can just extrapolate out where this could potentially go. And never good, of course. Another thing they're doing is something called the Brain Initiative, and that is to develop tools to record, mark, and manipulate precisely defined neurons in the brain. Sounds like mind control, which of course is what they're going to be working on. They're also planning pre-crime for mental health to stop mass shootings before they happen. I mean, if that doesn't give you like a chill, I don't know what will. This HARPA division is going to work with brain mapping so that they can develop pre-crime, just like Minority Report, to stop you before you commit a mass shooting. I mean, to say that this is a slippery slope is quite an understatement. It's psychotic and rife with the opportunities for this thing to misdiagnose people. I mean, how'd you like to have the police show up at your house and say, we're arresting you because according to, you know, our pre-crime algorithm, it says that you're likely to commit a mass shooting pretty soon, so we're going to have to take you off the streets or out of your house. Meanwhile, you haven't done anything wrong. You're not going to do anything wrong. They got your name wrong. You know what I mean? You know how like the police go and do SWAT raids and flashbang and kick the doors down, and it turns out they had the wrong address, like, which happens all the fucking time, apparently. Just imagine this. They put you in a padded room for the next 20 years. And like, you're like, I was never going to do it. How do you prove a negative? How do you prove you weren't going to go shoot up a schoolyard? Kind of hard to do that. How can they prove that you were? Well, this division will help. They're focused on biotech. They're focused on four things. HARPA. Biotech, supercomputing, big data, and artificial intelligence. That's where they're going with this. This is the blending of the computer world with the biological world, and it is terrifying. And the guy in charge of it, once again, Epstein's buddy. Not good. But of course, lest you think that he's the only psychopathic megalomaniac in this organization, don't worry, Eric Schmidt is involved as well. Former CEO, former chairman of Alphabet, the parent company of Google. This guy's got billions of dollars and he is hardcore into AI, and he's a very sketchy individual, a very dangerous individual who Whitney and I both sort of jokingly said, you know, maybe he's the president of the United States. And I'm not, I don't mean that to be taken totally seriously, but I think the guy has undue influence, and he has a questionable history as well. Google is obviously involved in this HARPA component, as is the Department of Defense, and they're using genome data that they've gathered. Google has gathered this through the Department of Defense. They're going to feed all of this into these supercomputers. They're going to have AI algorithms look at it. And they're going to then use this information to craft these healthcare programs, be they just guidance programs or actual technology that is embedded in you or is or becomes, you know, injected into you through the mRNA vaccines. And the last component of this is that they're also doing a thing called trace together, which is contact tracing. So what they want to do is they want to know when you're sick before you know when you're sick, so that the authorities can show up at the door and grab your ass and take you away to some FEMA camp to ride out your sickness. And if they can't find you, then they'll trace you through this trace together program. I mean, I'm sorry if this is freaking you guys out. I mean, it's freaking me out too, to be fair. But this is what they have planned. And of course, part of when you look at a digital enslavement campaign, you obviously have to keep the internet in consideration, right? So you're going to have a new internet. Let's just call it Internet 2.0. Internet 2.0 will be accessed through ID cards, an internet ID, which you will have, which will have your biometrics on it, like a picture, thumbprint, retinal scan, you know, you name it. So that you are no longer anonymous on the internet, right? Now, my suspicion is the way that they will push the internet ID card is the way they do anything that they want to get broad approval for, but people aren't interested. They'll use a false flag. So imagine this, speculation on my part, but imagine this. Somebody does something horrible. Somebody says, I'm going to kill the president, right? Online in a chat or something. And then the president gets killed. And they catch this person. They go, this person was saying it on the internet, but he was using a fake profile on Twitter, and we didn't know who he was. And, you know, people were concerned when they saw this tweet, but, you know, since he wasn't who he said he was, they couldn't figure it out. And he had a, you know, he was using a VPN, which hid his IP address, and nobody could, you know, could know who he was. And he slipped through the cracks and he killed the president. And now what? If he could do it, anyone could do it. So you can't be anonymous online anymore, right? And everyone will be like, oh, we can't have this happen again. Sure, whatever you say. Please, please, we'll do an internet ID card. Of course. And that'll be no VPNs, total tracking of you, no anonymity, all purchases monitored, online banking, you know, on the internet 2.0 will all be tied into your CBDC, your central bank digital currency. It will all go according to their plan. Problem, reaction, solution. Problem. Some guy who was anonymous shot the president. Reaction. Oh my God, we can never have this happen again. Solution. Internet 2.0, internet ID cards. The old internet will still be there, but it'll be slow and clunky and empty. It'll be like going to MySpace, right? You'd be like, where's the party? And everyone would be like, eh, not here. Internet 2.0 is where everything's going on. That's where you can do your online banking. That's where you can send your emails. That's where you can do social media things. That's where you can watch videos. That's where all that stuff lives. You, without your internet ID card, you refuse Nick, as Jimmy Jean calls him. You get to drive on the jalopy internet, you know, the jankety one that doesn't work very well and doesn't have much to see. Unless you get on the real internet, the new internet. And if you do that, then we're going to have your ID card. Because you see, they just do not want you to be anonymous online. It poses too many problems. It's not really a problem. But when you're an authoritarian regime that is up to no good, you want to make sure that the people aren't trying to rally it, you know, and do things that you don't want, because they will eventually come for you. So you set it up in a way where you make sure that nobody's anonymous anymore for your safety, for our safety, for everybody's safety, right? Except it's not about safety. It's not about security. It's not about any of those things. It's about tracking you. It's about knowing who you are, where you are, what you're saying, what you're doing. Are you being a good little soldier, or are you being a piece of shit? Are you somebody that has a problem with authority, or are you somebody that's going to go along to get along? And that takes us to the next component of this, which I mentioned a little bit earlier, and that is the social credit system. Now, this is not theoretical. This is something that currently exists in China, not all throughout China, but in Shenzhen was the test market. It's very real, and it is already happening. So the social credit system works like this. You basically get a score. In the United States right now, you already have a score. You have a credit score that fluctuates. It's a constantly moving number. If you are paying your bills on time and doing all that, your score goes up. If you're not paying your bills, your score goes down. If your score goes down too low, then you can't, you know, when people check your credit, if you're like renting an apartment or buying a car or taking out a loan for something, they're going to look at your credit. because that is a measure of how good are you at paying back the money that you owe in your, you know, up to this point. How consistent have you been? Oh, you've been good? Good. Well, then I feel more comfortable loaning you money. There's nothing really inherently bad about that. That's what you do. You need to know if somebody's a good risk or not a good risk. And you may still loan to them, even if they're a high risk, but your interest rate will be much higher and you'll require them to put more money down and things like that. So this is already in existence in this world. But the difference is that with the social credit score, it's not just about how well you pay your loans back. It's about how well you follow rules. How clear you are about doing the things that the authorities want you to do. If you are somebody that is fully compliant and you take the vaccine and you don't say bad things online and you don't, and you pay your bills when you're supposed to, your social credit score will be higher. And that will allow you a bunch of, quote, freedoms, things that you've already done. They'll take the freedoms from you and then grant them back to you piece by piece, depending on how your score is. And that could always change. Your score gets too low. Maybe your score gets too low and your interest rates go up. Okay, maybe that's the worst thing that happens to you. But maybe your score gets too low and you're not allowed to get on an airplane. So see, they have ways to make you comply with this. Travel restrictions. It's already set up in China. Your social credit score is too low. You can't get on an airplane. You cannot get on a train. Now in China, they have it set up already through QR codes into digital banking wallets. So kind of like crypto, kind of like PayPal, you know, but if you want to buy something or sell something, you have like a QR code and someone will scan. You hold up your smartphone and your QR code and you scan it through the reader and it works as your bank account. That's in China already. So in an example I've given before of how this currently works in China, a guy's smoking a cigarette, waiting for the bus, gets on the bus, still smoking the cigarette, big sign up in the bus, no smoking. Camera in the bus, right? This guy doesn't care. He's smoking his cigarette, gets to a stop, walks off, finishes his cigarette, throws it down, walks around the corner, his cell phone pings. And it's telling him that he was recognized on the facial recognition cameras for smoking on that bus. He's been fined 100 yuan or whatever. And that money's been deducted out of his account already. This will happen in 7 minutes, right? Guy's off the bus. He's around the corner. He gets this message. God damn it. I've been fined. So that's currently happening, right? So that guy's score goes down because of that, because he's smoking on the bus. Now, he goes home, starts interacting with his family, calls his buddy to talk to his friends. Can you believe I got fined for this? Friends like, hey man, don't call me. Now my score is going to go down because I'm talking to you. And that's exactly what happens. So they then punish the people that are tied to this person. Anybody that is in their network, if I'm the smoker and my score goes down and then I call my friend's score will go down because I'm talking to him now. So now there's like a shunning component to this whole thing. So it's, that's how it is there right now. You just imagine that being taken and dropped onto us. This social credit system is, there's a whole lot of options with it, right? It's much like as your credit score changes, it adjusts your interest rates based on, you know, you have a high credit score, you get better rates than somebody else. Well, your social credit system, your social credit score will do the same thing. It may dictate how much you get in universal basic income, how many of these CBDC coins you get. If your score is high, you get more. If your score is low, you might not get any. How are you up to date on your vaccine? Have you had your COVID-29 third shot yet? I see that you didn't have your COVID-28 third shot. And because of that, well, I'm sorry. I mean, you can't get on a train anymore until you are all up to date with all of your shots. And you are still missing a shot from last season that you didn't get. And we don't really even offer that shot anymore. And so I'm sorry, but you're locked out of the system. You know, your internet ID card that we talked about, well, if your social credit score gets too low, they just turn that off. Now you don't have access to your email, your online banking. You can't book travel plans. Not that you could travel anyway because your score is too low. You can't register your kids for school. You have no entry into society. You are an outcast. You're a digital outcast because of this. This is a real possibility. This is a probability. Unless we do something, unless we stand up against this, this is where we're headed. But the military, as usual, is going to take an oversized role in this, of course, because they're part of our digital enslavement. They're in charge of building the walls around us, you know, keeping us in. And we've all seen Terminator, Terminator 2, and all of these things. I mean, this dystopian future, that's what they want. And the companies and organizations creating that already exist. You know, the DARPAs of the world, they're out there. Boston Dynamics is building robot dogs. D-Wave is building quantum computers. I mean, Google is doing that as well. I mean, the future is now. And the military, yeah, let's just call it military/police, because it'll start with the military. It'll trickle down to the police. You know, what's the future like for them? How about drone air forces? Like the entire air force is just drones. Why would we send human beings when we could send drones? What about robot armies? I mean, like Terminator style, or at the very least, exoskeletons for soldiers, making them super soldiers. It's already happening. I mean, this isn't on the drawing boards necessarily somewhere. This is they're testing it out now. Satellite tracking. It's there. We already talked about pre-crime algorithms. This is definitely a component of this. So, you know, and of course the police, what have we been reading lately? What have I been reading lately? Well, I've been reading about how they're trying to get to a point where there's no more jail for people. Think about this. They won't put them in jail. Instead, they're going to put a digital ankle bracelet on them. And what they're going to do is they're going to mine all the data from them. They'll be, you know, required to stay in their house or whatever. It'd be like house arrest with this fancy ankle monitor. And I'm not speculating on this. They're talking about doing this. They're saying this is how the system would work. I mean, they're not just speculating. They're creating it right now as a way to get around the need for all of these jails. And maybe it's not for every, maybe it's not just for, you know, murderers and things like that. Maybe it's the low level crimes, but whatever, you know, and the reason is because if you're a human being out, you know, sort of interacting in society and creating all this data, that has value to them. You sitting in a cell somewhere for 3 years on some stupid, you know, larceny count. You know, I mean, you're not doing anything. Yeah, maybe you're making the private prison some money, but you're costing the state a bunch of money. What if they didn't have that cost of housing criminals, like low-level criminals? They could instead put them on these ankle monitoring devices and then collect data and then use that data and sell it to big tech or partner with big tech who can then, you know, run algorithms and say, well, this guy looks like he's about to smoke crack again. According to our health screening, it's better send somebody over there to get him before he starts smoking crack again, because that's what gave him all these problems in the first place. And knock, knock, knock at the door. It's the police going, we have a report that you're about to think about smoking crack. Nightmarish. It's part of a plan that's unfolding. Smart cities is part of that as well. We've heard that. The United Nations is talking about that. And of course, I was talking to Kev Baker about this. He's in Glasgow, Scotland, one of the test beds for smart cities. You know, he gets a message on his phone saying, you know, you're about 3 minutes away from your destination. He doesn't have to ask it. It automatically sends him that, or it tells him that there's a parking space available around the corner. Kind of cool, right? For now. But what happens when it's not? You know, what happens when they're able to achieve their real goal, which is, you know, using these smart cities under the guise of reducing our carbon footprint, of course. And they roll these out and they turn into massive data collection hubs, and you're put into micro housing, you know, like 300 square feet, little micro apartments. Well, I know that sounds a bit far-fetched and maybe kind of like a ways away in the future and perhaps not something we should focus on. But let me ask you this. Joe Biden's administration right now are rezoning areas that were single family housing zoned, and they're rezoning them into multifamily because the plan under Biden is to remove home ownership. Already asset prices are going through the roof. Home prices are going through the roof. But if you change the zoning from single family residence, you know, R1 to multifamily, R4 or something like that, then you can't build single family homes anymore. Next thing, all you're going to get are high rise buildings or mid rise buildings, you know, apartments. Maybe these little mini cities, you know, these little in the smart cities, it might be all you get. But even in the places that aren't smart cities, just the rezoning will make single family homes eventually go away. And that's the plan, because remember, you'll own nothing. They don't want you owning a house. It may take a generation or two for this to all get whittled away and get everyone out of these houses. But if they change the zoning rights and there's no more single family homes being built anymore, then you're right. You will never own anything. At least you won't own a house. But in a smart city, think about the implications of that. You'll be forced quarantined easier by the authorities there, right? And that's a no-brainer. They just lock everything down. Your self-driving cars that we, you know, talk about, they'll limit where you can go. You get in a self-driving car or an Uber or whatever, and maybe you're not authorized to even leave the city because your social credit score is too low. Maybe you are authorized to leave the city. You get in your self-driving car, but you can only go certain places. You're not eligible to get off at that exit. That exit doesn't apply to you. You can't get off there. That's the Bill Gates exit, right? That's where he lives. You can't get off there. There's, in a smart city, they'll have total medical surveillance over everybody. That should really terrify people. You know, the smart pills that you'll be taking that'll be monitoring what's going on in your body. You get a ping on your cell phone that your smart pill has detected something inside you that says that you might be coming down, or your vitamin D levels are rather low and you might be a candidate for catching COVID-29. Uh-oh. Well, since since you might be catching COVID-29, we've just shut off your ability to travel. Click one button, turns that off. Now you can't go anywhere because you shouldn't be going anywhere. You're about to get sick. You're about to infect everyone. And since we're in this smart city that's really tightly packed together, we can't afford you even going out into the lobby. You have to stay in your house and the doors automatically lock. You know what I'm talking about? But you won't be able to order DoorDash. You'll only be able to order from the company store. It may be that Uber delivers it, Uber Eats, right? Because they're part of the company store. But that little Chinese food place that you used to like down the street, they're not going to be able to deliver to you because they don't accept digital dollars anymore. They're on their way. They're just about to go out of business because they can't stay open because they're not a big store. They're a small store, and small stores, you see where this goes? I mean, it is a potential. This is digital Pyongyang. Okay. This is where if you're not showing proper allegiance to dear leader, you may be sent to the salt mines on a triple generation exodus with you, your kids, and your parents for committing the crime of trying to leave your micro apartment after the authorities told you that you're about to come down with COVID-29. So there's banishment, you know, from society if your credit score isn't high enough. There's banishment from society if you're testing, if the algorithm says that you have a 82% chance of developing COVID-29. The school system got an email saying that you were about to test, you're likely to get that. So your kid can't go to school today because they might have it. It's such a slippery dystopian slope. But this is what you get when you let artificial intelligence run the show. And that's a very real possibility. That is where we are headed. That is, I mean, this is just sort of an overview of how this can play out. Obviously, a lot of variables. There's still a little bit of time left before this happens. But I think it's important for people to start thinking about these things, to start thinking about what happens when our health is monitored by artificial intelligence, and what happens when our currency is programmable, or what if the internet 2.0 comes about, or the social credit system, how that's going to impact your behavior, how the behavior modification component of that is extremely devious, and who's going to be in charge of this? Who's going to be in charge, you know, the military and the police with the drone air force or a robot army? I mean, oops, sorry, the drone accidentally dropped a bomb on your house and blew you to smithereens. Well, but we can't put anyone in prison for that because it was a robot that did it. So sorry, you know, maybe you should be living in a smart city, because we never drop bombs on people in the smart cities because we know exactly where they are. Of course, the people can never leave the smart cities. But you'll own nothing and will never be happier. What a sales pitch, huh? If you like this program, please share it with your friends and family. It's the only way this information is going to really get out. I thank you so much for your support. If you want to check out my stuff, you can go to theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions. You can become a paid member at Rockfin. I encourage you to do that. There's a whole lot going on over there. Thank you very much, and I will talk to you soon.
Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there. League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.